Afternoon, you're here with Bike Sport Radio, where you listen to sounds of bike racing, and we talk about competitive cycling, bike racing, bike racers, and what you need to race bikes. It's Monday, July 11th, and
look at this.
Sounds of the Tour de France Stage 8 finish right here.
He is going to attack these riders, and here he goes. That was a perfect move, and he's put it in. And Lewis Leon Sanchez saw his shadow, Paul, and got the kick on him.
Well, he knew that was the moment to move, and Lewis Leon Sanchez has got the power in those legs. Thomas Vogler could not get onto his slipstream, Phil, and it looks like the Spaniard is going to get himself another victory at the Tour de France as Vogler comes round. It's going to be a yellow jersey for Vogler. He dreamed of the stage victory.
And in his favourite area here, as Lewis Leon Sanchez wins again, he went down the road at Aurillac with a race.
Lewis Leon Sanchez picking up the win there yesterday. Today's a rest day for the Tour, and pulling Thomas Vogler off the front, so unfortunately, poor Thor is no longer in yellow, so today's a rest day. We're also going to talk about the Glencoe Grand Prix. We got results from the Glencoe Grand Prix, Northern Cal, the San Rafael Twilight Crit, Junior Track Nats, Kenda Cup West Finals, and we've also got an interview from Glencoe Grand Prix with a men's pro winner, Eric Young. He was the winner. We got an interview, compliments of Gen X, our Northern Cal correspondent. What else we got? We got narrative, live on the bike narrative, blow by blow, of the Ellie Wheelman Grand Tour Triple Ride. I actually did a chance to ride that. Had a chance to ride that, and there's a long involved interview on that. It was a long day, 19 hours on the bike. You'll notice my voice goes lighter and lighter and more loopy and loopy towards the end of the ride that day. And also later we'll have a studio guest right here in the studio, Robert Sandoval. So talking about event medical and why you need event medical. So let's get into some race results right now. Okay, the San Rafael Criterium, a Twilight Criterium, held at nighttime in San Rafael, California. Women's pros, rounding out the podium from Menlo Park in third place, Mary Ellen Ash. Second place going to Red Racing's Martina Patella. And your winner from Southern California, Peanut Butter & Company 2012's Corin Rivera. San Raf Twilight Crit Men's Pros, third place. Bronze going to Skills presented by Pista Palace, Eric Marcotti. Second place, also Skills presented by Pista Palace, Rasan Bahati. And your winner from Full Cycle Sports, Ricky Escuela. In the Masters 35s, taking the win was Fusion Sport USA's Tyrone Hooper. Masters 35's Category 123's Dean LaBerge taking that win, riding for Team Specialized. Men's Cat 4's Swami Cycling's Matt McKenzie. Men's Category 3's Dulce Vita Cycling's Zach Starnes. And complete results can be found at usacycling.org for the San Rafael Twilight Criterium. All right, Junior Track Nationals in Frisco. Couple of reports from that. N-
then 1718 Omnium, your new national champion, riding out of Decatur, Georgia, for Greenville Spinners Bicycle Club, Matthew Lipscomb. And in the women's 1718 from Los Angeles, California, riding for Connie Cycling, Kate Wilson. In the women's 1718 Omnium. Junior men's 1718 individual pursuit, your new champion from Englewood, Colorado, riding for Chipotle Junior Development Team, Gregory Daniel. And in the individual pursuit women's 1718, riding for Now Cycling, Addison Albershart. Women's 1718 Kilo, your new national champion, riding for Pure Energy Cycling, Matthew Baranowski. Women's 1718 500 meters, new national champ from San Diego, California, Adams Avenue Bicycles, GS Adams Avenue's Jennifer Valenti. More California winners in the women's 15 to 16 sprints from Long Beach, California, ran for Team Tibco, Tara McCormick. And also from California, from El Segundo, running for Cycles Veloce, Simple Green Bike Religion, Chaz Michael Morales, winning the 500 meter in the 13 to 14 junior men. Junior men's 15-16 sprint, a local right out of Plano, Texas, riding for Matrix Richardson Bike Mart, Zachary Carlson. And in the women's 13-14 500 meters, out of Teagard, Oregon, riding for Beaverton Bicycle Club, Hannah McDade. More California champions. National champion Jules Gilliam from Manhattan Beach, riding for Connie Cycling, also winning the men's 10 to 12 500 meters. And in the 500 meters women's 10 to 12, a local rider out of Katy, Texas, riding for Team Spin Cycle, Summer McCack. And that's our junior track national champions. Complete results can be found at usacycling.org under Junior Track Nationals in Frisco, Texas. And the Glencoe Grand Prix, fifth annual, part of the NRC series. Women's Pro final results. Emma Mackey from Pescadero taking that win. And in the men's pros, rounding out the podium was Ken Hansen in third place. Hannibal Borajo from Lemon Grove taking second. And your winner from Bloomington, Indiana, Eric Young. And we've got an interview coming up with Eric Young in a few minutes here on Bike Sport Radio, the Glencoe Grand Prix. Complete results at GlencoeGrandPrix.com. The Kindercup West, part of the U.S. Cup Series, cross country finals, series finals. In the pro man, riding for Whole Athlete Specialized, Zachary Valdez picking up the overall win. Junior men's Cat 1, 1718, Casey Williams taking the win for Bear Valley Bikes. Category 1 men's 25 through 29, John Parson from Bike Bakersfield. Cat 1 men 35 to 39, Justin Mann riding for Show Air Rock and Road. And in the category one men's 50 to 54, Show Your Rock and Roll's David Sullivan. In the women's pro, writing for Show Air Rock and Road, out of Murrieta, California, Allison Mann. Category 1, women's 19 through 29, Ada Dvorak, writing from Reseda, writing for Bear Valley Bikes. In the women's 40 to 49, Annabelle Menninger from Pivot Cycles. Cat 2 women, ages 50 plus, riding for Trek San Diego, Gretchen Garcia, taking that win. Junior men's 10 and under, Alec Burton, riding for Bear Valley Bikes. Junior men 11 to 12, Nathan Hickey, riding for Team Pavlov out of Monrovia, California. And in the junior women's 14 and under, from Ensenada, Sofia Trujillo, taking that win. And in the 50-miler, open men's category, riding for Factory, Cannondale, Tinker, Juarez. 50-miler men's 40 to 49, John Salimonis, riding for InCycle. And in the 50-miler, men's 19 through 29, Don's Bikes, Chris Branson was your winner. Single speeders, 50-milers, EvanPlues.com's Evan Clues from Salem. And in the 50-miler women's 19 through 39, from Big Bear Lake, Lauren Gregg was your winner. That's a 2011 U.S. Cup and Kinda Cup. mtb-uscup.com for complete detailed results.
After 2 hours, what I would say was pretty hard racing out there today. But when you talk about picking your spots, and
all right, that was race results. Race results for the past couple of weeks here. We'll be getting into an interview with race winner Eric Young of Glencoe. We got some upcoming events right now. Upcoming in Northern Cal, the 12 Hours of Humboldt Mountain Bike Racing. 12 Hours of Humboldt, Humboldt County, off-road cross-country mountain bike racing. Check out teambigfoot.net for details on that. And again, that's 12 Hours of Humboldt. Also coming up, we've got in Southern Cal, benefiting the Mark Reynolds Bike Fund, July 30th and 31st at Rim Nordic. This is a mountain bike stage race, 2 days of stage racing, hill climb, dirt crit, super D, and cross country mountain bike races. Maps will be posted on the website at rimnordic.com. So don't want to miss that if you're into long distance and multi-type events off-road in the dirt. Hill climb, super D, dirt crit, and cross country. That's the Rim Nordic stage race. And coming up on July 17th, that's this Sunday, Southern California's State Criterium Championships for Masters. That's the Paramount Grand Prix. Paramount Grand Prix brought to you by Paramount Cycling Club, Paramount Racing Club, the division, the racing division of the Paramount Cycling Club. That's in Carson, California, Rancho Dominguez. And we want to make sure you know about Carmageddon that's coming. If you're coming from the North Valley or anywhere north of Los Angeles, the 405 freeway will be closed on that weekend. Use alternate routes, allow a ton of extra time if you want to get to this race. Metro.net. Metro's offering free passes, free bus service, and you can take your bike on the bus. You can also take your bike on the train. They're offering free service that weekend at Metro for Carmageddon, the 405 closure. And find out more details at Metro.net on the 405 closure. You don't want to miss the Paramount Grand Prix Masters State Criterium Championships. Full details at ParamountRacing.org. Okay, so that brings us to the next segment of our show here. Check your mic, Robert. We've got in the studio here guest Robert Sandoval.
How you doing?
Can we hear you?
I think so.
Check, check.
Let's see. Check. You hear me? Hear me? Yeah, I don't hear anything out of the speaker yet. Hold there on. It goes. Okay. There I am.
And Robert's with Race and Teach, I guess you call it. And we're going to talk about event services as far as medical goes after a couple of weeks of gnarly butt-kicking, flesh-shredding Tour de France stages. I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, perfect timing for that. Definitely.
So tell us what you do in medical services for bike events.
Yeah, well, my name is Robert Sandoval, and I go by the name of Race and Teach on pretty much every internet forum I'm a part of, and I've always been interested in first aid, and always seemed to be at the right place, the right time to lend someone a helping hand, and had plenty of training under my belt, but I finally decided to take the big step and go get certified and registered nationally, became an EMT, and next step's going to paramedic school, but I still have a love for cycling, and I saw a big hole there. I saw a lot of events going off and people getting hurt and no one there to take care of them.
Ouch.
A lot of times I just jump in with my little first aid kits, go and give them a little hand, clean out some wounds, and send them on their way. And I said, you know, I got to do something. I got to help this industry back. You know, I used to race, and now I'm slowed down a bit on that, but every once in a great while, I still get out there and race when I can. But I definitely see a big hole there. I know these ambulance companies are out there, and they charge a whole lot of money to sit there in their van and sit in the air conditioning and read a magazine and do nothing. Whereas me, you know, even the smallest little scrape, you come up with a small little scrape cut or a question, you know, and I'm right there willing to give you a hand and help you out. So
EMT is Emergency Medical Technician. That's a certification, right? What is involved with that?
EMT stands for Emergency Medical Technician, and they're constantly changing the acronyms there. It's basically the first step, which is EMT Basic. And we can do quite a bit, actually. We can do everything from... About the only thing we can't do is give you certain drugs and inject you with IVs, but we can pretty much bandage you, we can assess you, we can revive you, we can transport you, we can load you up and package you up, and pretty much like borderline having a paramedic there, except we can't give you the good drugs. We can help you with things like stings and inhalers and what's the other thing? I always forget about that one.
Bones.
Bones, of course. Yeah, no. Definitely splitting up
most
bones.
Most common bone cracked is what? Collarbone, probably?
The collarbone. Yeah.
Why is that?
Why
is that?
Cyclists tend to land on their shoulders.
Okay.
It just all your body, when you go over the bars or you go sideways, your top of your body hits the ground first. You put your hand, sometimes you put your hand out, sometimes you don't. And, you know, the collarbone is just...
Is it better to not put your hands out and kind of roll, or is it better to...
It's sometimes I think putting the hand out will help, but it depends. There's a lot of mechanics involved in studying the accidents. It's one thing I've kind of done. I've done enough of those crashes where, you know, I kind of...
You've done enough. You've fallen enough?
Oh, God, yeah. I've done everything.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, an EMT with experience.
Oh, that's kind of why I targeted the bicycles.
Right.
I also do motorcycle events as well, and I actually work with an organization called Rescue 3. We work out of Barstow, and we provide services to the AMA District 37 Desert Race Series. And you want to talk about...
I bet you know my buddy Alvin Blaine. He's broken, I think, almost every bone in his body out there in the desert.
I've probably come across him laying there. And
Alvin, if you're listening, say hi to Robert.
We just go to work, man. We don't even know who they are until, you know, they're gone and on the helicopter or in the ambulance. We're just doing our job and making sure they're stable and out of there. And you know, I know these injuries. We know what to look for, and it's one thing. I'm bringing on other EMTs to help out at these events. You know, sometimes it's good to have two of us there, which we found out at the certain LA circuit race.
Carnage, huh?
It was good until, I don't know, somebody came
by. Category fives, right?
Somebody came by and said, hey, you guys look kind of quiet. Yeah, those are words you never say to an EMT. You never go by and say, hey, you guys look kind of bored.
Oh, man.
Oh, that was a little rough day. But no, you know, having two of us there, we can do quite a bit. And like I said, we can do everything from splinting to, you know, controlling bleeding to reviving. I mean, we're trained in all those skills. We can identify most medical emergencies. And, you know, I know being a cyclist, that's one thing I train the ladies and gentlemen who work with me. I train them in the bicycle injuries, the more common ones that we're going to see. And most of the stuff we see at any type of, you know, cross race, a criterium or circuit race, even road races, you're usually going to see trauma, which is collarbones, every once in a great while, a femur. I saw actually we had a femoral stem break, which was really hard to identify because the guy got up and walked around on it. And I was like, this ain't right. Something's not right. And we got him to the hospital. And one thing I noticed about cyclists, the other thing is, you know, cyclists, you guys are stubborn. You don't like to go to the doctor. You don't want to be told that you can't ride your bike anymore. But it took a little while of coaxing, and you know, eventually he got in the car, went and had the X-ray, and sure enough, you know, it was a fracture at the femoral stem, and that's a tough one, man. And that's a rare one, but I'd say most common were collarbones and concussions. Those are the two that I see a lot of. And right now in the summertime, we're seeing a lot of heat injuries.
I've had four concussions. Never broke a collarbone. So
you've been drinking good milk, huh?
Really?
You drink a lot of milk.
Well, I don't know if I'm putting my hands out or not. Maybe I just landed on my head.
You know, you know what? I'll see two guys crash the same way. They'll both crash identical. One will break a collarbone, one will not. And we just don't know. A lot of times it's the
bone density.
Yeah, you know, some people's bones are better than I'm a small build, and I've never broken a collarbone.
That must be it.
And
why I can't climb a hill as fast as the guys who break their bones easier.
Yeah, because
I've got denser bones.
We're like birds.
Yeah,
our bones are hollow. But you know, like my brother and I. My brother was an ex-pro, and we're both about the same build. He's actually a little bit lighter. He's a little shorter than I am. And we were out on the trail one time, and he went down in what seemed like a pretty mellow crash. And sure enough, his collarbone was sticking out. And I'm like, you're like 20 pounds, 30 pounds lighter and almost, you know, 5 inches shorter. How the heck did you break that? You know, and it's just a matter of how you hit the ground, you know.
Right.
It's...
Road rash, that's one of the terms we hear out there a lot. Tell us about that, what it is.
Road rash. Oh, come on. Anybody who's ridden a bike knows that. Road rash is basically making your skin and the asphalt one. It's taking going down and sliding for a good period of time. You know, just taking layers of skin off. And, you know, there's always that debate about shaving legs versus not shaving legs. And I'll tell you what, I've seen the road rash on people with shaved legs a lot easier to clean and a lot less, how can I say this, a lot less chunking of skin being ripped out.
I suppose the hairs might help rip out skin then.
Yeah,
they get
caught on stuff, and you end up with just, instead of a nice smooth little raspberry and scrape, you end up with holes and a little more bleeding usually involved with that, but... The procedure is the same no matter what. We take our little saline water and take a sponge or a brush, and we just try to clean as much gravel out of there as we can. Dirt, gravel, weeds, grass, whatever it is you got wedged up in there, you know. And that's the whole thing is a lot of times riders would crash, go home, and, you know, by the time they get home, the wounds have already started to heal. You've already entrapped all that dirt and bacteria. You know, usually you go rinse it off with some water, but by the time you get home, it's already healing. You've already sealed the bacteria in, and it can lead to a lot of infection. So, you know, the goal is no matter how small your fall is, you know, come see your medical personnel, and, you know, hopefully it's us. I mean, my goal is to make it so that the promoters can actually afford to have quality medical on staff, on site, because Cool. You know, I think at the circuit race, for example, we had a rider come up, and he had done a race earlier in the day where he had gone down, and he had some good wound there, and he came over to us, and he's like, "Wow, this is great! You guys are prepped, man." The last guy I went to brought out a little, you know, Johnson & Johnson white first aid box and said, "Here, clean up your wound," you know. Whereas there, we had, you know, the gauze, the Curlex, and we, you know, wrapped him up and sealed him up nice after his race. And the guy was like, "Great, man, this is awesome. You know, I'm definitely like having the medical help there." And, you know, and I hear that from a lot of riders. They feel more comfortable knowing that there's medical personnel right there. And quality medical personnel, not just some guy who has some basic first aid training, you know. There was a race I went to like that where the guy didn't know anything. He knew CPR, and that was about it. And we had riders coming up all day long, and I jumped in, and I always carry a pack with me, and I kind of jumped in and said, "Hey, you know, I'm putting my race aside, and I'm going to work this event," you know, because when riders come by and say, "Hey, how you doing? Good seeing you here again." That's what I like to hear. And to a promoter or anyone putting on an event, that's what you want to hear, because those people are going to come back to you. They're going to keep coming to you, knowing that you have, you know, right, somebody there to take care of them.
Right.
It shows you care. So
first impressions are important.
So. Yeah, we definitely try our best to make everyone look good. And not only us, but, you know, we have a job to do. We go out there and make sure that everybody makes it through the event safe, and we clean you up and send you on your way. We can't diagnose things. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say, "Oh, yeah, that's broken for sure." But in most cases, you know, if you see something sticking out of your skin and your hands turn the other way around, it's probably broken. it's a good assumption there.
Right.
So, but, yeah, you know, we're definitely out there trying to make it known, and currently in the process of working on our website. You can get a hold of us through Facebook, Race and Teach Event Medical Services is what it's under, and I figure that's a pretty easy name to do. It's two things I love to do. I'm a full-time school teacher for Inglewood Unified, and I actually do all there. Since our shortage of nurses has occurred, I'm working there too, you know.
Oh, boy.
So I do my EMT stuff at school. And
three jobs.
Yeah, three. Just keep going. It's L.A. You got to have four at least. But, you know, racing, I've always loved to race things. And teaching, I love to teach. I put the two together, came up with my name. And, you know, we it stays from there.
You've
so.
Just done service at mountain bike races also, as well as road events?
Last year, we did a lot. We did the cross season with SoCal, and then I did one of yours, and we did.
How about mountain bike?
I'm trying to get with the mountain bike. I've put it out there. I'm probably going to work next year with the high school mountain bike league.
Oh, okay.
With Matt, right. He's got a couple good EMTs there now, and I'm hoping next year that I can get out there and contribute with them as well. You know, we're growing. You know, definitely. I was a mountain bike racer. So, you know, that's kind of where my heart and soul is. You know, I love the mountain bikes. I love the dirt. And
a little trickier for access, so the cross-country course.
Yeah, one thing, and that's what I have. One thing we have coming from the Rescue 3, we use our dirt bikes to get into the access points. And I have a dual sport plated dirt bike. And on the dirt bike, it's equipped with all my gear. It's got, you know, a quick detach bag system that carries all the BLS equipment, which is basic life support equipment I need to take care of any wound I would encounter. And from that point, you know, we're radioed as well. We have our FM radios, which are on a private channel. And that way we can communicate with each other. Because one of the other things, too, is we've got to keep an element of privacy. You know, we can't be on a public, you know, band radio and everyone's hearing, yeah, this guy's, you know, bleeding internally and we're giving out names and vitals and information. You know, we've got some rules that we got to keep some privacy. And, you know, that's another thing too. A lot of times people come up and, you know, ask for information on their friend, and we really can't disclose a lot of that. You know, we can just say, you know, talk to, you know, their family, or, you know, they'll get information when it's ready. We can't sit there and say, yeah, you know, he's broke and this is what he's got, and you know, there's a privacy issue. So, you know, I understand. You know, if I saw my buddy and my teammate, you know, go into a ditch, and I'm, you know, wondering if, you know, what's going on, I definitely want to know myself. But, you know, I don't, you know, I don't want to be the one that, yeah, you know, I worked on this guy and we did well, or this guy or girl, and you know, all of a sudden I'm slapped with a lawsuit because right. I told, you know, their friends that, yeah, you know, you broke
this. Follow those rules.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we got to do. And privacy. The HIPAA. It's HIPAA.
HIPAA?
Yeah, that's what it's called, HIPAA. And so, like I said, we're up to date on everything. I try to employ EMTs that like the sport as well and or are interested in it, so they learn about it as well. And, you know, I also try to bring, you know, young EMTs that just getting their qualification to get experience, because it's a great teaching, you know, tool. They, you know, if most EMTs end up driving an ambulance, transferring people from care facility to care facility. Well, my EMTs, we get out there, get our hands, you know, dirty. We get out there and we deal with the broken bones. We deal with the medical emergencies. And, you know, a couple of things right now, you know, everybody, my advice to anybody who rides, you know, may seem silly and whatnot, but the road ID bracelets are really a great tool to have. And I'm not going to plug them too much, but any type of ID that will help us help you is, you know,
yeah, I carry them on my saddlebag and on my helmet. I've got one too. The Yikes ID, same concept. They have a smaller tag.
Anything with an ID that will help us, you know, figure out what's going on with you. Because if you're knocked unconscious and nobody around there knows who you are, that, you know, we go through a big long checklist of stuff that we need to figure out. Hey, well, you know, what's going on here? We got to start from, you know, ground floor and work up. And sometimes we find those IDs and that really helps us pinpoint what we need to target. And you know, I wear one religiously. I wear it every day. I don't care where I'm at, you know. And like I said, we're out here to help the bike industry. We're out here to help anyone that needs it, you know. I say medical or event medical services, and it's, you know, the same thing. Sometimes private parties, you know, swimming pools and things like that, you know, you having a dance on your property or 5K runs, 10K runs. You know, I was a runner as well. So, I mean, cycling is one thing, but we're trying to open it up to everybody. You know, we can be dressed up in suits and mingle like, you know, clientele. And when somebody drops from choking or has a heart attack, we jump into action, you know. So we can meet the needs of any promoter in any event. And that's what I'm trying to go for, you know. And like I said, most things that happen in the city, you know, I don't have the ambulance yet to transport. And that's something that will eventually come
helicopter.
Into... helicopter. Yeah, I'm going
to...
Do
a Carmageddon coming to L.A. Yeah. We are in Los Angeles here. So
definitely.
Now, we're talking with Robert Sandoval of Race and Teach right now on Bike Sport Radio about Event Medical. The phone number here is 213-252-0998. 213-252-0998 if you want to give us a call and chat about Event Medical Services. And we will be right back.
Bike racing, the world's toughest sport. Imagine listening to the radio on Monday to hear the weekend's race news, or having a chance to call in and chat with an expert about our sport. Well, imagine no more. We are Bike Sport Radio. Tune in to KILL Radio for reports on the weekend's local race action and results. Hear how local clubs or teams are doing, or call in and chat with a guest speaker about the sport or some of its many products used. We cover road, mountain bike, cyclocross, and track cycling in Southern California and are giving our fast-growing sport yet another media boost. Our studio is big enough for guests, and we have hosted a few notable ones. If you would like to be an in-studio guest, contact us. You can listen to Bike Sport Radio live or listen to an archive show at radioforall.net. Please donate at any level to us through the Kill Radio online link at www.killradio.org or support Bike Sport Radio by linking us to your websites. Thanks for listening to Bike Sport Radio.
All right, we're back. We're back with Race and Teach's Robert Sandoval talking about Event Medical and Event Medical Services, why it's important for your bike events. So And the Tour de France is going on right now. Talk about talking about medical. Everybody on the internet there has seen it probably everywhere. Tell us about poor old Johnny Hoogerland's butt, man. It looks bad. He hit.
That's one of the. That was just a strange incident. I was watching that live, and I just was in shock. And my wife and I were both watching it, and she's just like, "I don't believe I just saw that." And I said, "I don't either," but I was too busy watching the dynamics of his crash over and over, going, "Oh!" And he actually kind of lucked out. There was a big debate about he hit that barbed wire with his leg. And that's what sends the cringes, because that, you know.
I'm cringing in the studio, listeners. You can't see me, but I'm cringing.
The heart rate he was at, believe me, I still cringe. The heart rate he was at, that blood was just pouring out of those legs. And, you know, I was watching the crash, and, you know, physically, I mean, structurally, it looked like he landed in the grass, in the soft soil. And that kind of helped him out. But the tearing from that barbed wire, you know, that sudden stop could have really caused some serious damage. So I think he really lucked out on that. And the fact that he got up and finished that stage, I was just in shock at, you know, the strength of him as a rider. It was just an amazing thing. But overall, this tour has been a really interesting example of how, you know, how prepared the tour is for this type of medical situations that pop up. I mean, they've got doctors in the cars, they got a doctor on the bike. I hadn't seen him before. It was interesting to watch him working while he was on the bike there, which was really neat. But you know, they're dealing with the type of stuff that the cyclists, you know, encounters, and that's, you know, road rash, lacerations. And their biggest issue during a cycling event like this is, you know, controlling that bleeding. If they lose too much blood, they can really get into some serious issues with shock. You know, they call it hypovolemic shock. Basically, you're losing blood volume, and, you know, that's a really dangerous thing. So anytime, you know, his bleeding particularly was really bad. It just didn't look like it was stopping no matter how much they, you know, compressed it. But, you know, I also was really watched him at the end of that event. He was looking really pale. So I kind of wasn't surprised to not see him get his jersey. I think he was getting some really, you know, high-end
shock.
Yeah, medical aid.
Yeah, I understood. He finished the race.
He did finish 12 minutes back. I mean, a little more than that. But, yeah, he finished. He looked as pale. I mean, pale. And he, you know, lost a good amount of blood. He had the trauma. You know, I think if that fence hadn't been there and he'd just ridden it out, he probably would have been okay. He would have had, you know, a little soreness, but he would have had the ability to disperse the energy. That barbed wire literally just trapped. I mean, he hit it and it just stopped him suddenly. And the sudden stops are where I've seen that most trauma occurs, because you can't disperse the energy from the impacts.
Right.
That's the thing with road rash. You know, you think you see guys go down and they just slide. That's actually a really good crash. It's just a burn and that heals. But when you see those guys hit the ground and not move, those are the ones where you're going to see something broken. And if you notice in the tour, all the broken collarbones are the guys that literally, when they crash, they stop right where they crashed. And those are usually the guys with the broken collarbones. Mm. Now, the one that was interesting too was, what's his name, who went into the ditch and broke?
Kloden?
No, not Kloden.
Vinokourov.
Vinokourov. When he was down in
he
the
was in
ditch,
a tree, wasn't he also?
He was in that ditch. There were quite a few people down in that ditch.
A few people.
But when they were picking him up, you could see the rotation of his leg. If you got to look real carefully at it, and I saw it, and the first thing that I told my wife, we were both watching it, and I said, you know what? That's a possible pelvic fracture. We're looking at that, or he's really stuck in his cleats. And, you know, and I'm watching him, and then when they brought him up, and he couldn't put any weight bearing, and then you hear the reports that it was a possible fracture, then, you know, all the signs were showing that. You could see it by looking at it, but you know, it's tough. The human body can do some interesting things. I've seen some really cool twists, especially in the motorcycle world. And you see the body doing all kinds of weird contortion.
Come on, baby, do the twist.
Yeah, guy gets up and it's like, ah, I'm fine. I said, are you sure?
Wow.
He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, okay. But, you know, that's because they rolled it out. And usually right. The guys who are like 2 feet away from where the bike made impact, those are the guys we usually find all kinds of broken things. So
from a more personal standpoint, my personal right now this year, I've actually focused on ultra riding. And I did my first triple century, 300 miles on a bike, 19 hours. What are the dangers in that? What possible injuries would I be sustaining? I mean, surprisingly enough, I didn't injure anything. I finished it. I was just generally fatigued everywhere.
Yeah, the big thing with that is what they call environmental emergencies. You're dealing with things like extreme cold or extreme heat and overheating your body or
I lucked out. It was cold. Yeah. It was 69 degrees all day.
Perfect weather. As you ride and you weaken your body, you start depleting its energy stores, you become more susceptible to a lot of the extremes in temperature. So you need to make sure you're staying nourished. And, you know, right now we're seeing, I just got a report the other day on a motocross racer who, in the middle of his race, he passed out. Apparently, he had gone dehydrated. He dehydrated himself and ended up passing away from it. So there's a lot of, yikes. I'm not thirsty, you know. But what's a good rule I live by is I'm drinking water every 10 minutes, whether I'm thirsty or not. It doesn't matter on how long my ride is. It's instilled in me. I look down at my computer and I see 10 minutes, I drink. I don't care.
Great.
And that's especially a great now idea. With our heat and humidity we've had lately, it's just been, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people out there with very minimal water because, you know, they don't want to carry it. And
right.
I'm just like, you know, hey, drink. Here's two bottles of water. You know, have some water.
I'm drinking it here in the studio. I mean, it's hot in here. So
yeah, I've got my bottle over here too. Yeah. So it's been the same thing. But, you know, that's right now our biggest concern in EMS with anybody is heat. The weather right now in L.A., you know, we've been really hot. Today's a pretty nice day. But the last week here, I mean, the ER rooms have had people dehydrated and suffering from heat stroke, heat exhaustion.
I have friends in Dallas. They ride out their ultra distances, and they've been having record-breaking 100-degree heat for the last 2 weeks straight,
I think. The thing is to stay hydrated. And, you know, water really is your best source of, you know, I mean, everybody's like, well, I'm going to take this, you know, mix and drink and whatever, and that's what I'm going to drink. But, you know, when you're out at that point, you know, you want to be pushing water and, you know, regular room temperature, not ice cold water, just, you know, regular.
So also on the ultra distance, just a couple more things. I got some listeners that do ultra distance. So if you're you were talking about temperatures. So if you're on this ultra distance ride and you may notice it getting a little cold while you're riding, you may want to put that warm gear on before you really think you need it because
you're in
a state where you may be more susceptible to change.
Exactly. As you weaken, and everybody's different. You know, like I'm a heat rider. So, you know, the hotter it is for me, the better I work. I've always been that way. But if it's cold out there, I'm layered up in, you know, all kinds of jackets and trying to, you know, because I got to work at a temp. But as you progress through these ultras, you know, you got to monitor your body, especially as an athlete. You really got to, if you start feeling cold and it's, you know, 95 degrees outside, that's a problem.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah, that's a really bad thing. You know, you might want to start looking at, you know, when's the last time you've eaten and you know, how's your, is your balance, your pedal stroke changing too much? You know, well, how much water have you really been intaking? Because you're not going to feel it until later on. You know, you're not going to get it. Sometimes if it's really bad, you're going to get it right then and there. But usually afterwards, you're really going to start feeling really bad once you stop. Because your adrenaline hides a lot of symptoms. I've seen guys break bones, get up on their bike, and take off again. And then 2 minutes later, they just, I can't go anymore. You know, adrenaline. Because your leg. Adrenaline is
a wonderful thing, adrenaline.
You know that you can.
Save your life, and it can kill you, too.
At the same time, It's one of those things, seeing this all the time, you know, I've got to get these people to slow down. I've had guys with, you know, good-sized gashes try to get up and possible neck injuries, try to get up and do stuff, and I'm fighting to keep them down, going, you know what, you need to just stop, you know, and you literally got to sit on them to keep them down because, you know, until you can assess them to find out what the damage is, you know, I don't want this guy to get up and then all of a sudden he's paralyzed, you know, and it happens. People right. get up and next thing you know, they drop to the ground and they've just severed their spinal cord. and you know, people think, well, my spinal cord's pretty tough. I've taken this. Well, keep this in mind. And this is one thing that really stuck out with me in all my classes. The spinal cord is the consistency of a banana. Think about how soft a banana is.
A ripe one or a green one?
Depends on your age, I guess. Huh?
Depends on the age. But that's
about not very strong.
That's not. And that's why, you know, when someone from, you know, most of the time we look at the what they call a mechanism of injury. And that's the way you fell, the way you crashed. A lot of times if we see it, that really helps us figure out what could be possibly wrong and what areas to really target as a preliminary observation. When we first get there, we do that primary assessment to try to figure out what's going on. And, you know, the neck and the spinal cord stuff is just nothing to play around with. And a lot of times you may not think you did it. As you're going through the air, you're not sure that you, you know, may have hit it. But as an outsider watching you hit the ground, we can see it. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, like I said, I know cyclists are stubborn. I'm one, okay? So I can relate to you guys. And but, you know, when we say get down, we say get down and stay down, and we're holding you down, listen to us. Your race is pretty much over at that point anyway. So...
Yeah, the only upper body bone I ever broke was my hand, and I insisted that the doctor cast it so I could hold on to my brake levers.
You too, huh?
Yeah.
I broke my scaphoid BMX racing, and I went all day with it. I went all day. I thought, I just sprained it. Probably, I was at a dinner date, I think, about 11 o'clock that night. I reached over to my girlfriend, who's now my wife, and I said, you know what? I got to go to the hospital. I think I broke my hand. So I'm in the ER room, and...
Well, that's a wonderful thing you guys are doing at Race and Teach, and it sounds like you got all the credentials and then some for especially what we need around here in bike racing and bike racers and what you need to race bikes. So, anything else you want to add before we go into contact
like
info?
Like I said, we're out there work with everybody's budgets. We're in that stage mm-hmm. where we're developing ourselves. We can do a one-race show. We can do a multi-race event. We can go anywhere pretty much in the state of California.
There you go, race promoters.
Yeah.
Affordable, quality medical, Race and Teach. And how would we get in touch with you?
Right now, we're working on a website. It will be Race and Teach Event Medical Service. Race and Teach's Event Medical Service.
R-A-C-I?
R-A-C-I-N-T-E-A-C-H apostrophe S. Or S apostrophe, I can't remember. I gotta work it out. But right now, you can find me on Facebook. Yeah, same thing, Race and Teach Event Medical Services, or just raceandteach@yahoo.com. Either one of those, and that's the best way to get a hold of me right there. We can figure out what you need, and you know, help you out. You know, your riders will definitely thank you and come back. And that's the goal right now. Is we want to keep everybody safe, healthy, and keep everybody in the black.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Robert.
Oh, it was a pleasure. This is a great experience.
All right. Thanks a lot. Okay. Bike Sport Radio is all about bike racing, bike racers, and what you need to race bikes. Race and Teach. All right. We've got some interview with we've got an interview with Eric Young, the winner of the Glencoe Crit. Live sounds blow by blow of the LA Wheelman Grand Tour Triple. So sit back and enjoy the rest of our show with sounds from bike racing.
What I would say was pretty hard racing out there today, but you talk about picking your spots, and you picked yours very well, pulling out the win here today. But talk about the aggressive nature of this race, and especially the racing by Jelly Belly.
Yeah, with just... It's just Jameis and Jelly Belly having a bunch of guys. It was definitely up to them to really be aggressive and chase, and so that kind of dictated a lot of the race. But Dave and I, knew we were a little outnumbered here, but we just kind of sat up and made sure we stayed up in the lead group. And then with one to go, Dave just kind of did awesome. I couldn't ask for anything better of a lead out than that. He led out the whole last lap, and then with about two corners to go, I just came off his wheel and. It's not too too far to the last from the last corner of the line, so I just knew that I could probably hold everybody off. So.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you follow domestic pro cycling at all, you know, Bissell and a lot of the races that you guys do, it just seems like sometimes it can turn into a Bissell team time trial with the way you guys can dominate races. You come here with a much, much smaller squad. Talk a little bit about that. You know, we spoke with Emma Mackey, the winner of the women's race earlier with Team Tibco, but really does change the dynamic, and mentally it does kind of change your approach to the race when you know you've got fewer riders from your team in the event.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it definitely, you can't be nearly as aggressive. You know you have to save it for the end. But with that said, Dave has been top 10 in the U.S. Pro TT a couple times, and so he's really, really strong, and I knew I was fast enough to win at the end, so it was just about getting lucky to get to the end and then using your strengths to the best advantage.
Is that hard for you, though, to have to kind of hold back knowing you can't be that aggressive because you don't have the numbers? Be honest.
A little bit, but my favorite part is the end, so it's okay if it works out.
Well, truly, the end is all that matters, and that's what happened today. For Eric Young, your winner, Bissell Pro Cycling, in your AT&T Men's Pro 1-2 race. We'll let you get cleaned up here before we get into our award ceremony in just a few moments.
Jen Reiser with Bike Sport Radio. I'm here in Glencoe Heights, Illinois, looking at the Glencoe Criterium. What a great day of racing out here with overcast conditions. This is the fifth annual Glencoe Grand Prix. And let me tell you, this little community put an excellent event together. You've got a circuit race that's just under 2K. There's about 10 turns in it. It's got a KOM, QOM hill on the backside. It's a figure eight. So there's a sprint points competition. There's a QOM competition and a KOM competition, and there's, of course, you know, the prestige of the win. I'm here at the men's pro race, which is a pretty good field of men. We've got Jelly Belly. We've got a local team called Alberto's, which you can hear that they're off the front right now. The crowd just going wild that the local is here. And we've got a Bissell guy in here. We had Rasan Basahadi, but he was out in a crash earlier. These guys have racing for 2 hours, almost 50 miles of racing. And as you can hear, that the crowds are going crazy here. A lot of people lining this finish line. So three laps to go, that's just under 6K.
8 seconds the advantage with 3 laps to go.
You can hear 8 second advantage.
That is a move that Jelly Belly wants right now. Rustavi Tulum is Jeremy Duren up the road.
Absolutely amazing what this community has done. We've got 312 Urban Wheat Beer with two serving stations for the adults. This is going to be the third band they've got here tonight. So the party starts after this race. The men are going to be done in less than 10 minutes. And that's when the final band goes on, where all the community is just going to go over there and hear the band play. There's thousands of people here. The crowds are going wild.
What Stavi Tulumis needs is for there to be just that little bit of confusion, just that slight delay from the field right now. Jameis Sutterholm, Bissell are going to have to be the riders that try to bring it back. Jelly Belly, as you said, Ken, will do no work right now. They are going to sit in. They're going to expect the field to bring this back. Tulumis is going to be on the rivet.
So just to bring everybody up to speed, I'm in Glencoe Heights, Illinois, just 25 minutes outside of Chicago, and a beautiful little community that's put together an amazing race. And I have to tell you, for a community to shut down their streets all day, not being able to get to their homes, they're having barbecues on the front lawn. They've really wrapped their heart and soul around this event for the fifth annual event, and they just want to keep going and make this big.
These riders are down a lap. These riders are up a lap. This is something interesting. I'm pretty sure Jelly Belly would know this. Your rider paired up with Stavi Tulumis is down a lap. Stavi Tulumis is off the front, and he's got the strong team working perhaps with him, with a rider that is down a lap. Stavi could be riding to a huge victory. Armchair courtesy of Jelly Belly. Let's make some noise!
The men here definitely showing some signs of fatigue 50 miles in.
You say Jelly Belly knows this, but you have to wonder if the rest of the field knows that.
Yeah,
that really changes the dynamics if they have that knowledge.
No question. When your heart rate's 180 and riders going off the front, off the back, you don't see everything, you don't know everything. He could have been dropping back.
losing out.
Stop it to Loomis. Just that brief moment there, a lap and a half.
Red
if you look
shirt.
Across the wing now, it is Nick Fry and Jamie Sutterhoff. Two laps to go. Jeremy Power sitting second wheel with two laps to go.
Stop, he ran right in there and he's on a wheel. This is awesome. You've got two local riders banging it up with the best riders in the country. To Loomis slotting right back in. Two laps to go. Triple X racer, defending Criterium champion David Moyer in the front group.
We've said it before.
So the winner's jersey that they put together for this Criterium has each winner on the jersey on the left panel. So if you win the race, the next year your name's on the jersey. So definitely some fun stuff going on there with this little community.
Jay Marisol, all their help up here. We've got our USA Cycling officials crew, just some unbelievable work going on. And we are now inside of 2.6 miles of racing left to go. For a moment there, it looked like it might be the Stathi Tulumas show. They have all come back together again. Tulumas, though, with maybe a little bit of drive in there, realizing that he had an opportunity. They did not want to see that go away. We are an hour and 56 minutes in. The next time they come around, it'll be the sound they've been waiting for nearly 2 hours. The sound of the bell cannons, a sound that you know very well. It all comes down to this. If you've got your position...
The community even had Miss
turn number 10,
Illinois come out here, who was a contestant in the Miss America 2010 to MC the event.
Looks like Jelly Belly figured it out pretty quick. They brought it back. They figured it out. Stathi Tulumas right back into the mix in the field. David Moyer right in there. The best professional Criterium teams in the country. Gemma Sutterholm, Team Type 1. Bissell. We have Jelly Belly. All these great teams lining it up. 1.5 laps to go in the bicycle race. National Racing Counterpoints. Big prize money. $15,000 to our top finishers. Four riders coming through. And we're looking for our pace car in just a matter of moments.
All that is left for Jelly Belly here this evening, actually, they've won the Shelly Jewelers Sprint competition. They've won the King of the Hill competition. All they need to do now is win the race. Jelly Belly has definitely been the premier team in this contest today, which will go on nearly 2 hours in just a little bit. As we look off to the north, in just moments, we'll see that Imperial Motors Jaguar XK, our lead vehicle, working overtime today. It'll come around turn 10 and bring our riders through. We will ring that bell for them. It'll be one more time around this 1.34 mile, 10 corner circuit in the village of Glencoe. This is what needs to happen because having.
So there you have it. 10 corners, 1.3 miles.
Folks,
quite a long crit.
All of you, you need to put your hands together, bang the barriers, make some noise right now because the Jaguar XK is coming through. The riders are single file, and it is one to go.
Bissell on the front, drilling it with Jelly Belly on them and Jamie Sutterholm. So watch from the local jewelry company. Awesome gift for athletes out here.
Pounds per square inch. They're going to go through the turn. Maximum speed sliding as they hold on for dear life. Every corner in the last half a lap is a risk. You have to risk everything. You have to be through the final turn at the front to win the bike race.
Folks, look out right now because this could be a Jelly Belly crossover dribble, jump back, fade, cold-blooded. As these guys go 3 for 3 for all the jerseys here today. We're looking to see them come out of turn number 10 when that Jaguar XK comes into view. That'll be it. see them do that here. We want to remind everybody once again, grab your spot to watch the finale of this race right now. Watch your nose, watch your toes, stay back from the road, because you're going to see speeds like you have not seen all day here on the streets here in the village of Glencoe. It is going to be on in just a few moments when they come flying through. Dan, I'm looking over there at you right now. You got this half smile on your face. You know what this is all about. You know what's going through their minds right now. Everyone's battling for positions. Hands are coming off the
crowd,
but the elbow
waiting in anticipation for that last corner. Here we go. Here comes the XJ Jaguar.
The Jaguar was on the ropes. Riders out full speed as they make their way up along the left-hand side barriers, up and out of the saddle. This is it. Coming through the center right now. Up the front, it is going to be Bissell on the line. Bissell taking it out. It is Eric Young of Bissell Pro Cycling, your winner of the fifth annual Glencoe Grand Prix. 64 across the line. Eddie Ball, Barajo taking our second spot. And Ken Hansen of Jelly Belly, your third place finisher.
Nice win for Bissell.
Bissell results, your top three once again. 52, Eric Young, Anibal Barajo, and Ken Hansen, your top three for the Glencoe Grand Prix.
Here we are, narrating the first ever, for me, triple century, L.A. Wyoming Grand Tour triple, and coming up on two riders here, passing riders left and right. See who these guys are. Go Hemet!
Yeah.
All right. A couple of guys wearing Hemet shirts. Maybe from the Hemet double. I'm 10 miles into the ride on my E5 in my profile. Ironman TT bars. Pointy tail helmet, all aeroed out, psychological advantage. No, actually, this is great. I'm hauling ass. I'm maintaining, so far I've maintained 20 miles an hour. 21 miles an hour, actually, average. But if I, let's see, a 300 miler, 20 miles an hour, that'd be 15 hours. That's unheard of. There's no way I can do this in 15 hours. So, but you know, hey, I'm fresh right now. And in Malibu, 10 miles in to the triple. We'll be coming back at you later. All right, we're back. Still in Malibu. Deer alert. There are deer up here. Fauna. Lots of fauna along with the flora. There's a dead fawn right there in the center divider. Young deer. I don't know, probably a doe. Didn't have any horns on it yet, but it was pretty young. And awesome job by my support, Dennis, who's ridden Ram before himself, and he's driving my truck, following me, and perfect timing on back at Trinkus there at the red light. He went on ahead, tripped the red light, so it would turn green, so I didn't have to stop. Perfect timing. Nice going, Dennis. And we're just passing the turnoff here for Charmley Park, I believe it said. Still in Malibu. Back. We're back. Just entering Ventura County, just across the county line, north of where Mulholland Drive meets the ocean. And running hot. Still no signs of any riders at my pace, but I guess I won't catch any at my pace. I'm only going to catch the ones that are riding less than my pace, huh? Yeah. There's another rider up, passing them. Passing riders right and left on the Grand Tour Triple. Point Doom coming up here soon. The fog has come in. It's foggier. A little cold. Actually, Point Magoo. What am I calling it? Point Doom. I think there's a Point Doom. Right before Sycamore Canyon. Point Magoo
coming up here on the Grand Tour Triple. And yeah, a little chilly now. Okay. Port Hueneme, Oxnard area, checkpoint number one, done. And 35 miles into it. And that's approximately a tenth of the way done. That means only 90% left to do. Looking for Port Hueneme Road. Okay, we're on the Potrero at a bike exchange at mile 45 on the lighter bike, the one that goes up hills better, because you know I don't. And this is a steep ass hill, and two riders. I can't see. They pulled ahead of me. Actually, they passed me in the uphill. First riders to catch me. So far, I've been catching riders right and left. These two guys blew by me up the hill. Skinny ass little climbers there. So, there's one summit. Still got the steep section of Portura coming up shortly. So, here we are on Portrero, the gnarliest, steepest portion of this ride, and oh my god, just past a tandem in Granny Granny, they must have been spinning 120 RPM, I don't know. Me, I'm in my lowest gear and barely turning the pedals over. Switchback up here coming up, and oh man, one steep mofo. Some motors, and we wanted you to get a chance to hear me struggling on Portrero on the Grand Tour Highland route. And in the triple. Out of the saddle again for another steep pitch. And I'm about to fall over going so slow. Some riders probably can't even balance on a bike this slow. And it doesn't help when you can't breathe either. So, and there we are. There's a rider walking their bike up there. That's what I should be doing. And here comes a rider catching me before the top. Here on Bike Sport Radio. How do you feel? You're on the radio.
Awesome.
Awesome. You're climbing well. Kicking my butt. See you up there.
I do.
So, that was one rider going by me on this steep hill. I don't know the percentage grade here, but oh my god, there's more.
There's more.
There's more. I just turned the corner and there's more. And just to tell you out there in radio land how steep it is, here's a guy walking. It's that steep. And walking it, huh?
Stretching.
That's what I should be doing instead of trying to ride the bike. But
150 miles to go.
Yeah. I'm on a triple. I'm doing the triple.
Uh-huh.
The Triple Highland. All right, we'll be coming back later on Bike Sport Radio. I gotta catch my breath here. Woo! That's it. Okay, we're here. And, Oh, come on. I'm looking back. It says only 7%. Great. They lie. Whew. Oh, good job. All right. That's the hardest hill to ride, so. Yep. That was the hardest one. There's nothing like that the rest of the ride. Whew. All right. Coming back at you later on the Grand Tour. All right, the Peach Hill rest stop. Say that again?
Dennis said also, go up here, make a right, and a right.
Yeah. Right on a zigzag over to Peach.
Yeah.
And then Spring we go left on.
Yeah.
And we're at 78 miles.
And then right on Grimes.
Feeling good.
Grimes
Canyon, the next big challenge, huh? We'll be coming back at you later. All right, cracked 100 miles and managed to drop my route slip while pulling out my digital here. Great, thanks going. So, a little click out, stretch, grab the route slip. We're on the Denison grade, the climb between Santa Paula and Ojai. About 13 miles to go or so till the lunch break for the double riders, and I'll stop with the double riders because I'm riding with a couple of them till we part our ways later for the triple. All right, so Denison Grade on Bike Sport Radio, coming back later. Okay, lunch break at the lunch stop on Park Road in Ojai, 114 miles, and liquids only. I had two little potato chips, so pretty much liquids only, and getting ready to head back out towards the lake. Okay, so climbing out of Lake Casitas, 6 miles an hour into a headwind by myself. I don't see any other riders at this time, and geez, barely able to maintain 6 going up this hill. I can see the summit right there, maybe a mile, and then it's a downhill into Rincon to pick up the route sheet for the extra 100 to Gaviota. Rincon is where the double centuries riders turn and head south. I'm going to turn ahead north to get the triple here at the Grand Tour on Bike Sport Radio. Ah, Santa Barbara. Here we are. We're on Cabrillo Avenue, right along the beach. Getting ready to head by the marina. The sun is out. It's sunny in Santa Barbara. That's unusual. It's usually cloudy here on the Grand Tour Triple. Coming up on 149 miles, almost to the halfway point. Cool. And there's the volleyball games going on the beach. Sand up. Approaching downtown Santa Barbara. Good news, the turnaround point is not Gaviota, which we thought. It's actually Mariposa Reina. A little bit closer. Not quite as far as Gaviota, so. And we're on Hollister Avenue, 167 miles into it. 167 on northbound with a crosswind. Riding solo, I picked up one triple rider, and he rode a little while and then dropped off, and so yeah, cruising at only 15 miles an hour now, and up near the upper end of Gaviota, Elwood, and Goleta, and Elwood, And then that's it. And then there's no more towns till Mariposa Reina. Little history, Mariposa Reina. It's an old, old refinery there that was the only place that was attacked on the continental U.S. by the Japanese. Believe it or not, the Japanese actually got to the continental. It was a submarine. Japanese submarine surfaced offshore and started lobbing shells at the Mariposa Reina refinery. I don't think they did any damage, and then they left. Bike Sport Radio on the Grand Tour Triple coming at back at you later. Two-thirds of the way done now.
More than two-thirds.
206 miles into it. And back in Goleta. On Hollister Avenue, heading back to VeloPro Cycle Ring. To check in there at the checkpoint for the second time. And Gaviota wasn't too bad. Seemed like more of a crosswind in both directions than a headwind and a tailwind. I don't know, the wind clocked around. Not bad. So, two-thirds of the way done on the Grand Tour. And there's my support team, Dennis, clapping on the side of the road on Bike Sport Radio. 244 miles now at Emma Wood. We're southbound, just left the 101, got on a separate bike path that goes down below the 101 near the water. Kind of an eerie glow from all the motorhomes parked here, the rush of the ocean, and the bike path. And nothing, absolutely nothing out here on this bike path. Not even critters. Oh, there's some cyclists coming the other way. How about that? Riders up. How about that? It's a family. Mom, Dad, and the kids in between Mom and Dad. Commuting home from a nice day at the park, maybe. I don't know. Again, 244 miles into the LA Wheelman's Grand Tour Triple. 56 miles to go. Zuma Mountain. Zuma Beach, Zuma Hill Climb, the final climb before the finish. Oh boy, am I tired. And the Triple Century, there's a pretty good hill climbing out of Zuma Beach back to Malibu Canyon, where the start is. And we are on that final climb on the Grand Tour Triple.
And that was the last recording I did, actually, on the Grand Tour Triple. At that point, I simply forgot to use my recorder. It was about 5 miles from the finish, cruising 6 miles an hour. So you notice my voice kind of faded away. But what a ride. 19 hours, 6 minutes, LA Wheelman Grand Tour Triple. So thanks for listening, everybody. That concludes Bike Sport Radio today. And don't forget Carmageddon next weekend. Check out Metro.net. Find out all about the 405 freeway closure. Use alternate routes or ride your bike. Thanks for listening to Bike Sport Radio.